Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Mark Maselli.
And I'm Margaret Flinter.
Well, Margaret, we're just back from Best Practice Conference in Boston, where some of the greatest minds in healthcare came together to share ideas about ways to improve healthcare delivery and outcomes. It was a strange juxtaposition, though. Such a positive gathering of like-minded individuals against the backdrop of the marathon bombing that was gripping the city and the nation all last week. Our hearts go out to all the victims of the tragedy.
You know, if there was a silver lining anywhere, we're so fortunate that the victims had access to some of the best trauma care and best medical institutions in the world. It was very impressive to watch the entire healthcare community mobilize to treat the many victims as well as first responders and volunteers.
It's also amazing to witness the mobilization of the public safety community across the city and region to track down the suspects while keeping everyone safe. And Governor Deval Patrick showed great leadership and poise throughout the whole ordeal. They presented a calm voice amid the much chaos and uncertainty.
And Governor has also been a guest on this show speaking about the state of Massachusetts and their role and distinction as being the first in the nation to embrace near universal access to health coverage for all citizens of the Bay State. And that's kind of given the rest of the nation a primer on what happens when an entire population gains access to health coverage. General health improves.
Our guest today will be addressing the same issue. Chiquita Brooks-LaSure is deputy director at the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight at the Department of Health and Human Services. She's a key player in the rollout of the insurance exchanges under the Affordable Care Act.
Well, Mark, even for those of us who study this all the time, it's safe to say there's still confusion and uncertainty about how the online insurance exchanges are going to work for millions of Americans seeking affordable health insurance. So we are looking forward to some up-to-the-minute information from our guests.
We'll hear from factcheck.org's Lori Robertson. But no matter what the topic, you can hear all of our shows by Googling CHC Radio.
And as always, if you have comments, email us at chcradio.com or find us on Facebook or Twitter because we love to hear from you.
We'll get to our interview with Chiquita Brooks-LaSure in just a moment. But first, here is our producer, Marianne O'Hare, with this week's headline news.
I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines. Blame the economy. Analysts looking at a slowdown in recent years in the pace of growth in healthcare costs, which had seen double-digit inflation in years past. Well, it seems the growth in healthcare spending has gone down in recent years due to the economic turndown, not because health delivery has gotten more efficient. More Americans are opting out of seeing a doctor, seeking elective procedures, and are putting off preventive care due to unemployment, underemployment, no insurance, or more Americans being given high-deductible insurance policies through employers. Good for the employers seeking to control costs, but it's forcing Americans to put off spending their dollars out of pocket on health care. And the trend is impacting earnings in the health care industry, with weak first quarter earnings reports from across the health care sector. Analysts are looking at spending growth for 2013 and predict many Americans will put off care until the health care law kicks in 2014. Meanwhile, there's a pretty abundant lack of awareness about benefits to many Americans under the Affordable Care Act. According to a report on CNN, 26 million Americans are likely to qualify for some kind of tax credit under the health care law. Families making up to $96,000 a year would get a rebate under the Affordable Care Act to offset the cost of insurance, but most don't even know about it. New York City is at it again, taking a bold step towards impacting public health. They're considering a measure that would raise the age for being legally able to buy cigarettes from 18 to 21 in an effort to reduce smoking among the age group in which most smokers take up the habit. The bill, introduced by the city council, has the backing of Mayor Michael Bloomberg and would make New York City, which already has the highest cigarette taxes in the nation, the first big city or state to set the smoking age at 21. I'm Marianne O'Hare with these healthcare headlines.
We're speaking today with Chiquita Brooks-LaSure, Deputy Director for Policy and Regulation at the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight at CMS, the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. Ms. Brooks-LaSure oversees regulations related to the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. She was previously Director of Coverage Policy at the Office of Health Reform at HHS, overseeing consumer protection, exchanges, and Medicaid. She was a staff member at the Ways and Means Committee, which played an integral role in developing the Affordable Care Act. and Medicare Part D. Chiquita, welcome to Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
You know, your task at HHS is to oversee how states are preparing to comply with the full implementation of the Affordable Care Act as it relates to offering insurance coverage to the uninsured. Now, the exchanges are supposed to provide affordable, consumer-friendly online insurance marketplaces that offer access to health care coverage for millions who currently need it. And I think it's safe to say there are many consumers and small business owners who still have no idea what the insurance exchanges are, and much less how they're supposed to work. So can you describe for us, if you would, who will be able to buy insurance on the exchange and how they'll work?
Yes, the marketplace was envisioned as a place that would allow consumers and small businesses to easily shop for private health insurance plans. The marketplace will provide comparison tools, simplifying the process for buying insurance. Tax credits will be available for low and middle income families to help them afford insurance. Consumers will be able to enroll via the web, telephone, in-person, or paper applications. For the federally facilitated marketplace, we're developing a 24-hour call center so that consumers will be able to get information on the process, compare plans, and then get enrolled. I would like to encourage listeners to visit healthcare.gov to learn about the many changes that have already occurred and what's been coming in the next couple of months.
Well, Chiquita, now we've got 33 states around the country who are not planning to set up their own insurance exchange at all, that are going to rely on the federal exchange. But what sort of differences will exist for consumers between the different exchanges?
Sure. Well, there are a number of states that are making progress towards establishing state-based exchanges, and consumers in states without their own marketplaces will have access to the federal marketplace. We're developing a single streamlined application that consumers will be able to access. And that means that when consumers apply, no matter where they are, whatever state they're in, they will have the same experience of being able to go online and enter information to determine whether or not they will be eligible for some type of subsidy. They can then proceed to look at plans that are available to them in their location and make a choice as to what coverage might be best for them. State-based marketplaces have the option of using this same application, or they can create their own, but with rules that are consistent across the state.
You know, Chiquita, I want to talk a little bit on some of the policy wrinkles that have been thrown in at the secretary. Arkansas is certainly one of those who's come and asked the secretary for a little relief as they try to think out how they'll manage their particular state coverage. And they really want to rely on the use of private insurances in lieu of Medicaid expenditures. What's the status, if you can tell us, of the Arkansas approach, and what implications might it have on different possible exchanges in some other states?
So we are completely committed to working with all states. And my understanding is that our Medicaid team is working with Arkansas and is actively engaged in conversations with other states as well about the options and resources available to them. As we have been working on development of the ACA, states have come to us with different ideas, and we're very open to hearing what innovations that states are thinking about, and of course being consistent with making sure that consumers have the protections afforded under the Affordable Care Act.
Chiquita, there have been numerous rules issued by Health and Human Services governing what are called the essential benefits, benefits that have to be included in those plans being offered in the insurance exchange. I think we're calling those qualified health plans. Could you tell us more about the so-called 10 statutory categories of essential benefits, what they are?
Yes, under the statute, essential health benefits must include 10 categories: ambulatory, patient services, emergency services, hospitalization, maternity and newborn care, mental health and substance use disorder services, prescription drugs, preventive and wellness services, and chronic disease management. And finally, pediatric services. We're working with the states in terms of enforcement, but they continue to be the primary enforcers of the Affordable Care Act, and we do seek to preserve that role for them.
We're speaking today with Chiquita Brooks-LaSure, Deputy Director for Policy and Regulations at the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid at the Department of Health and Human Services. Chiquita, states in the federal government supposed to have the insurance exchanges in place and ready for consumers by October 1st of this year. But there still seems to be quite a bit of confusion, not just among consumers, but among many small business owners and even some policy folks on how these plans will be navigated. What's being done to get the word out about the exchanges, especially the federal exchange that will be providing coverage to so many millions of Americans?
We've recently released the Navigator Funding Opportunity Announcement, which enables community and consumer-focused nonprofits to apply for a grant to help spread the word to consumers and to help them enroll in the marketplace. We encourage people to follow HHS's social media channels located on healthcare.gov to get up-to-date information on the marketplace.
So, Chiquita, let's take a look at the affordable part of that online insurance exchange. So I'd like to maybe ask you to take a look at some of the rules that have been put in place. Certainly, the medical loss ratio has already provided billions of dollars in rebates to consumers. And then there's the three R's, risk adjustment, reinsurance, and something called risk corridors. Tell us how these protections are going to keep insurance rates affordable.
With millions of new potential consumers, insurance companies can anticipate significant increases in revenue in the coming years. The marketplaces will allow consumers to compare plans side by side, dramatically increasing competition. Insurers, they are designing their plans to compete, and they'll have to work to be more efficient with their dollars instead of passing along costs to consumers. As you mentioned, the Affordable Care Act created three new programs to stabilize and moderate rates and allow for the purchase of lower premium coverage under a catastrophic plan for young people and individuals who otherwise can't afford insurance. The Permanent Risk Adjustment Program will assist health insurance plans that provide coverage to individuals with higher risk populations and will reduce the incentive for issuers to avoid enrolling only healthy individuals. The Transitional Reinsurance Program is a three-year program designed to reduce premiums and ensure market stability by helping issuers cover the costs of high-risk enrollees in the individual market. It will lower premiums in this market by an estimated 10 to 15% in 2014.
Chiquita, that was very helpful. There's going to be a lot of information with those new customers coming in, and HHS is really promoting a culture of sharing big data, and the data associated with this rollout is obviously going to be quite massive. So managing all that data and making it consumer-friendly seems like a challenging proposition. Tell us about the tools you've developed called the Data Service Hub. Tell us how these hubs are supposed to facilitate the insurance purchasing experience.
So the Data Services Hub is a back-end tool that will provide one connection to common federal data sources that are needed to verify information, such as income, citizenship, immigration status, and access to minimum essential coverage. We have completed the technical design and reference architecture for the hub. It's really important to know that the data hub will not store any information. It is not a database. The hub exists solely so that marketplaces will be able to securely submit questions about application information, and the federal government will provide information back to the marketplaces.
Chiquita, the Department of Health and Human Services also had recently announced that there would not be multiple insurance plans available to choose from for small businesses or their employees that use the federal exchange until 2015, not 2014, as was the original date. What's your thought about the impact of this delay on small businesses and on the plans that are available to small business? Are there any other strategies being thought about?
We believe that in the, as we call it, the employee choice provision is a very important part of the Affordable Care Act. For the first time, starting in 2014, small businesses will be able to comparison shop for coverage for their employees, and they may qualify for a tax credit for the coverage. Marketplaces will give small businesses the purchasing power of a large employer, and their employees will benefit from this lower cost of coverage. Just for transitional purposes, we've proposed that in just 2014, a shop may elect to have businesses choose one plan to offer their employees through the marketplace. But in 2015, employees will be able to choose from the full range of plans in the marketplace.
Tell me, let me ask one question. If I'm a low-income individual who's going online and I might have the sort of approximation of my income, I take it those service hubs go out, grab from the IRS or maybe from our Department of Labor or from whoever, sort of verification of my income.
Right.
When I'm done with this, will I have that as a printable form? So it will say, hey, by the way, Johnny Smith, your income was X. Your number of people in your family is Y. Here's where you finally end up on the exchange. You're going to pay 4% of your adjusted net income into the exchange. Does it come back with that type of specificity?
So if you were entering in online, it's a iterative process, if that makes sense. So you'd see the screen that says, this is what we think your income is, and you would go through a verification process. Once you went through the process of figuring out exactly, let's say you do qualify for a tax credit, then what would pop up is how much you would pay per plan, because it's going to vary based on whichever whatever plan you're choosing.
And,
so,
and is that net of what I'd get back from, because I'm capped, let's say at 4%, I'm at 175% of income. I can pay no more than that on my adjusted. Is that what you're finally
giving? No, okay. Because it depends. So you're capped at 4%. If you choose one of the two lowest cost plans, but it say you chose a plan that was the fourth lowest, you would pay more than your 4%. And so, but what would come back to you is if you're doing this online, you would see that your tax credit gives you different buying power depending on which plan you chose. And then you would see back, okay, if I want to choose this plan, this is how much I would pay.
Tell me this. Do my credits roll back to me automatically? Are they front-loaded?
So you get, as an individual, a monthly amount that is paid directly to your insurance company. Once you finish enrolling, your insurance company gets it directly, and then you pay whatever the difference is on a monthly basis. So it is prorated per month. You do have the option to pay the entire premium all year and then get it back as a tax credit on your income taxes. So you could enroll through the exchange and say, I don't want to take the tax credit till the end of the year, and then you'd get back. And so at the end of the year, they'll reconcile the amount. And we encourage people to, if their income changes mid-year significantly, to come in and get an adjustment so that they'll have a better sense of what they may get back or owe. You always get the full benefit. It's just that if you wanted it capped at a certain amount of income, yes, you would need to choose the one of the two or lower plans, and that's because the tax credit is pegged to the second lowest, what we call the silver plan. So if you choose one of those plans, you're guaranteed to pay less than whatever the income cap is. There may be other options that still are lower, like you could choose a bronze plan and have an even lower premium or perhaps even no premium. But you also have the option to say, I want to choose one of the more expensive plans because it's offering a better network.
Chiquita, there's been some talk about individuals versus individuals with dependents. So if it's when we talk about the income and the premium sharing, is that just for an individual applying for insurance? But if the individual, for instance, is also putting their 23 and 24-year-old on the plan, each of them have to apply individually to get the premium, or is there a family component to this?
You don't have to apply as an individual. The family can apply as long as they are all part of the same tax household, if that makes sense. So people who are on the same tax return apply together, and the tax credit is adjusted based on family size, et cetera. When you're applying online, all that information is part of the eligibility process. So the individual doesn't, they just need to know how to build, enter in their information, and then the hub is helping the marketplace determine exactly how the premiums work.
We've been speaking today with Chiquita Brooks-LaSure, Deputy Director for Policy and Regulation at the Center for Consumer Information and Insurance Oversight at the Center for Medicare and Medicaid at the Department of Health and Human Services. Chiquita, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations on Healthcare.
Thank you.
At Conversations on Healthcare. We want our audience to be truly in the know when it comes to the facts about healthcare reform and policy. Lori Robertson is an award-winning journalist and managing editor of FactCheck.org, a nonpartisan, nonprofit consumer advocate for voters that aim to reduce the level of deception in U.S. politics. Lori, what have you got for us this week?
Well, Mark and Margaret, Senator Dianne Feinstein of California has been the target of viral attacks. Conservative websites and bloggers have claimed that Feinstein said all military veterans are mentally ill and should not be allowed to own guns. That's not what Feinstein said. Instead, she said that veterans should not be exempt from an assault weapons ban that she had proposed. She said post-traumatic stress disorder was one of her concerns. She in no way said that all veterans suffer from PTSD or that no veteran should own guns. Her remarks were made at a March 7th Senate hearing on her assault weapons bill. Senator John Cornyn of Texas offered an amendment to exempt military veterans from the ban. The bill already exempted active military and law enforcement. Feinstein said that there had been no exemption for veterans in the assault weapons ban that was enacted in 1994 and expired in 2004. She went on to say that she was concerned about post-traumatic stress disorder. She said she was open to a compromise, but Cornyn would have to, quote, find a way that veterans who are incapacitated for one reason or another mentally don't have access to this kind of weapon. Cornyn then misrepresented her remarks, saying he wouldn't want to suggest that all people who served in the military suffer from a debilitating illness, and bloggers and Facebook posts quickly twisted her words as well. Feinstein's concern is not misplaced, of course. It's well documented that veterans, or anyone else, suffering from PTSD can be a danger to themselves and others. And that's my fact check for this week. I'm Lori Robertson, managing editor of FactCheck.org.
FactCheck.org is committed to factual accuracy from the country's major political players and is a project of the Annenberg Public Policy Center at the University of Pennsylvania. If you have a fact that you'd like checked, email us at chcradio.com. We'll have FactCheck.org's Lori Robertson check it out for you here on Conversations on Healthcare. Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. Around the world, there are some 300,000 health facilities that do not have adequate electricity or lighting. And in these clinics and hospitals in the third world, many women give birth in near or total darkness. When Berkeley, California OBGYN Dr. Laura Satchel changed careers after a life-altering back injury, she decided to focus her attention on confronting this global health issue, which is one of the factors in the high rate of maternal infant death in the world.
You lost the light, and the only way to get light was to burn the calendar.
They burned the calendar.
So you could see enough to cut the cord. Okay, you get the prize for the most amazing story.
In Nigeria, where the problem is particularly pronounced, tens of thousands of women and newborns die during childbirth.
So much of what we do requires electricity. The monitors, the lights, the machinery for helping with deliveries. It never occurred to me that in other parts of the world that the things that we assume to be completely fundamental to medical care would be absent.
Dr. Satchel's husband, Hal Aronson, is a solar power engineer, and together they formed We Care Solar. They developed a portable solar power and lighting kit that could charge via solar panels by day and be installed in clinics to provide power at night.
What was remarkable was that when they saw that, they wanted to keep it.
And they said, please leave it here because this will help us save lives even right now.
That was the light bulb moment for us. Even a little bit of power could go a long way towards saving a life.
The kits come equipped with everything a clinician would need for communication in a medical emergency, electricity for walkie-talkies and cell phone powering, and power enough for a variety of lights and enough power to run some diagnostic equipment in the event of a surgical emergency.
We had a doctor who requested a solar suitcase last Thanksgiving. He called us 5 weeks later and he said, I want to tell you what happened. The night that I came, I was able to save a woman with twins using the light. And I would have called you the next day, but there was an outbreak of cholera the next day. And for the next 30 days, every man, woman, and child that had cholera came to our clinic, and we used the solar suitcase every night. He said, for the first time in the history of this village, no one died of cholera. We saved 122 patients. And he said in the past, 50% of these people would have died.
WeCare Solar has grown from a backyard manufacturing operation with friends pitching in to a full-scale manufacturing plant in Berkeley, California. They've provided kits to hundreds of clinics around the world and are hoping to scale up their operation to meet the pressing need, not just in remote clinics, but also during disasters as well. WeCare Solar, providing power and light for clinics around the world, improving the outcomes of the patients being served. Now that's a bright idea. This is Conversations on Healthcare. I'm Margaret Flinter.
And I'm Mark Maselli. Peace and health.
Conversations on Healthcare, broadcast from the campus of WESU at Wesleyan University, streaming live at WESUFM.org, and brought to you by the Community Health Center.